When your best defender is the goalpost, it's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello, it's me.
You can find us.
So I was going to say, when you can't always trust your goalkeeper, but you can trust your goalposts. A little harsh on Joe Bendick this week, but...
Well, all goalkeepers, yeah. There was a lot of...
That's true.
All kinds
of... That game had a ton, but... There's a number.
All kinds of weird goalpost stuff happened this week. New York City hit it twice in the course of the same passing move. And had a goal go in. In that same game, Slasha Kleshchen had a penalty go off. Two different teams hit the bottom of the crossbar and had it go out. It was we complained a lot about defense around the league. But let me tell you.
That goalpost is the posts had did it put in a solid shift this week.
The goalposts always, unlike most teams, always have somebody on the far post.
Sometimes actually better too. I think there was one in the last Montreal game as well. I think Piatti rattled it off the top post as well.
It was a weird time. Whitecaps were away in Colorado. Finally, a result. A result that's not a draw.
Finally, a result. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how we want to tackle things this week, because we had a few midweek games, but maybe we'll get to those teams when we get to them and talk about their sort of form over the week. But, yeah, I think we talked about this last week as kind of a need-to-win game, but it really didn't matter who it was against. It was a need-to-win game. Still a positive result to go to Colorado, play at Elevation, play with, a couple of players still sort of with Knox, and to get the result. Did you feel like, okay, it's a 2-1 scoreline, so it's not amazing, but do you feel like Vancouver controlled this match? Is this a step in the right direction? Was this just because they're playing Colorado Rapids? How do you rank this game in terms of what it means for Vancouver right now?
I think that what's important... is that Christian Teixeira is good as we've seen him in terms of momentum. I joked about the Teixeira committee being the key after some of the goals that have happened, and then also the opening goal in this contest. I just think that the Whitecaps have been the knock that you can have on them in all of these draw situations is that there is no, is that they got into losing positions to start with. In so many of them, in one or two of these that stretch of four draws, I think in one maybe the Whitecaps were holding the lead before, but mostly it was scenarios where they got into crazy, crazy deep deficits and then were able to dig themselves out of the hole. So it was kind of a new situation to see, like, can you hold on to it over the course of a whole half after being in a 2-1 position heading in a half time, and they were able to do it. So I think even though it was the Rapids who have been having a rough time of it this year, I still think it was the right result and the important result for the Whitecaps.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, given that they had a little bit of a different look at the back line, so of course Kendall Waston is now away prepping for the World Cup, after Daniel Henry come in, I thought he did actually quite well, was pretty aggressive, won a number of clearances, linked up with Jose Aja well. They did give up a goal. I didn't feel like it was as bad as some of the goals they've given up, but I agree. I think this was overall Vancouver looked fairly in control of this one. And although Colorado had a number of shots, they had not a ton of shots on goal, and really didn't ask too much of Brian Rowe in this game. So it shows to me that defensively Vancouver was much, much stronger in this one, in sort of limiting the chances that were coming their way. It will be interesting to see if they can translate and apply this formula elsewhere. But, you'd hope that this is a look in the right direction.
Now, is this the one? It's all blending together for me, but is this the one where Howard tries to punch it out and punches it right to Reyna, or was that a past game? I'm trying to remember. For that second goal, because it continues kind of a rough run of play for Howard.
I believe so. Let me quickly watch the second goal here.
I think this is
just appeared. Oh, there was one. The second goal is just a poor clearance. It basically just gets kicked out to Jordi Reyna, and then he just blasts it back in.
Yes.
But it doesn't look like it's Howard. It looks like it's one of the center backs.
Yes. Yeah, no, that was a game last week. Again, kind of.
Yeah, it's like a poor back heel from the center back out, and then it just literally falls to Reyna, who's cutting across goal.
I've got in my notes there is a. I remember at one point Blomberg is called for handball. He definitely looks like, or he wasn't. Right. There was a call that looked like it could go that way, but it definitely looked like he got his hand on it. Overall, just a solid result after so much weird 1-1s.
I agree. It's going to be hard for fans to take this one and say too much about it, but everything that we talked about for the last few weeks that Vancouver was doing well and the things they weren't doing well, I feel like this game was fairly emblematic of them continuing to do the things they did well and then also fix some of the errors they've been making. And that's a really positive sign, is that the team does seem aware of the things that they need to fix and are starting to address some of those things. The question is whether they can put together a string of results now. And I was looking at the table and I was like, okay, so with a couple of results, Vancouver's still in it with a bit of a shout. They're sitting at 20 points, which, you know, depending on results, well, I mean, if they win another game and depending on what RSL does, they could leapfrog RSL and all of a sudden they're sitting third in the league or in the Western Conference, at least. However, I keep forgetting that Vancouver has also played at least one more game than everybody else in the Western Conference. And so that's the thing that could really come back to bite them if they can't start stringing together consistent performances, is that, for instance, they're sitting just 1 point behind Portland Timbers, but Portland Timbers have been doing well and also have three games in hand. And so that's the kind of thing where the Whitecaps needs to be paying a little bit more attention perhaps to this and going, well, that means that there's at least three must-win games coming up. Because if they don't make up those 9 points now, come the summer, you know, Portland could easily grab those. And then all of a sudden you're really in a difficult place that's going to make it hard to climb up the table.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that if you look at... if you look at the schedule coming up, you see Orlando, Philadelphia, Colorado again, Chicago, and DC. Mm-hmm. You would kind of hope to see, DC would be playing in their new stadium at that point, and perhaps they would have a bump up from that, and perhaps associated transfers that we will talk about a little bit in a bit, but. That's not a bad schedule if you're looking to build momentum back up.
If they can do something with it.
Yes.
I was talking to a friend at work today about this, and I said, you know, it is going to be interesting to see what they do without Kendall Waston, because I'm not reading too much into it, but this is the first game they've won in, was it five? The key difference being Kendall Waston wasn't in the back line. And I just wonder what happens if they do put together a string of performances without Kendall Waston. And, you know, one of your DPs, is he a DP? He's the captain.
Yes.
And he's one of their star players. What happens if, you know, they put together a string of results and, you know, Henri and Aha or Aha and Mond end up putting together enough performances that you seriously go, maybe we need to manage Kendall Waston's minutes. I don't think it would happen, but it does raise an interesting question of, if they do start getting results without Waston, what do they do when he comes back?
I do think that it's to a certain extent is situational. The issues that you have with Waston, like I think that if the team is rolling a little bit, it going back years, I think that it's whether or not he's frustrated. So if he's not feeling frustrated, if he's had a great World Cup, if he comes back and the Whitecaps are winning, I don't think that there's a huge drop from having him there, because I think that his level of play and his morale will be in a good position.
Well, and the other part of that too, I guess, is if he comes back healthy, if he picks up a knock at the World Cup, it could be a really positive thing that you've got your other center backs getting minutes together now to sort things out and build some chemistry together, because it's entirely possible. It's a long World Cup. Costa Rica looks well positioned to at least advance past the initial group stages. So, you know, a lot can happen.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. What we're the situation that we're in, and because we're about to go into a break, is you end up in the conundrum of, do you say we just ended a 5-game unbeaten streak, or a 5-game winless streak, or are we in a 5-game unbeaten streak?
Yeah. No, and it's the question that we've kind of been asking, and a lot of Whitecaps fans have gotten really mad at me and us a little bit for sort of sticking up for the Whitecaps and being very frustrated with the results. But as we keep saying, like, there's a lot of teams that have been inconsistent and they've lost a lot of points because they've gotten nothing out of games. You know, and it sucks to see 3 points out of 4 games, but it's better than zero. And those points matter at the end of the season. And if we can even have that level of consistency, that could be the difference between versus seventh place.
Yeah, no doubt. The one point I also wanted to make, because you were talking about center backs getting minutes. I thought that Donnell Henry had a decent showing on his emergence.
Is it Henry? Have I just been saying Henri wistfully?
I do believe that you have been misled.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Donnell Henry. You've done a very good job.
He came in. Some people wonder whether or not he was kind of a failed pick to pick up. He went off to Ottawa. He came back from Ottawa. And did okay. I thought he was fine in this game.
I do too. And also, it may not have not been in like an electrifying performance or have done everything right. But, you know, he hasn't really had chances. He's been struggling with injury. He went away to get some minutes in Ottawa. I thought this was as calm and as organized of a center back performance as we've seen out of any Vancouver center back in a long time. And that's saying a lot for a guy that hasn't yet played with the team. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't anything where you go, wow, this guy's the star of the future. But it was a very good performance. And it was steady. He seems like a very calm center back, which I like as well. He's a little less frantic than Aha and even Waston at times. And so I go, there might be something here. You know, it could be Waston and Henry together.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, Aha's been doing okay, but I guess that's what the point of having this time.
Yeah.
One team that had a much weirder game was Toronto. Which I kind of caught only the back half of it. Once Sebastian Giovinco scored the third goal, it kind of looked like this was going to be a bit of a rout, or at least just, you know, I boxed up the tent, so to speak. Coming in at halftime, but all of a sudden it's like I have a. On in the background, and it's like Columbus scored again. What is happening? And then, of course, to continue a no good, very bad season /year/2 years, Michael Bradley concedes a penalty in the 90th minute to
First of all, I do want to say right now, my thoughts and prayers are with Michael Bradley's fans and families for seeing a player die on the pitch in such a gruesome way. It's really, it's unfortunate to see a player die. Of course, I'm joking. Michael Bradley's still alive, but maybe not well. I had the same thing. I sort of tuned in at the second half, and I was like, oh, shoot, you know, good old Columbus Crew here is, I hate to see them being the team that Toronto finally beats. And just mistake after mistake after mistake. And I first thought on Twitter people were being just, you know, people love to hate Michael Bradley. And I thought, okay, that's not really fair. I mean, come on, it takes a team to win. It takes a team to lose. But I'm sorry, watching the game, you go, those are three preventable goals and all three goals go through Michael Bradley. However, in his defense, as we said last time, he's not a center back.
Yep, absolutely.
He's not a, and he, like, I know that he's played that position before. He's not a good center back. I did run an official poll on our on That's So MLS at That's So MLS on Twitter to sort of ask what possible combinations Toronto could use better defensively, or if there should be any change at all. So, what were the results here? Oh, right. Okay. So, number one coming in at 0% for the votes is Bradley is okay at center back. So not a lot of people voted for that option. At 33%, we have put a bag of rocks on. And at a whopping 67%, bring in a youth player, as we said last week.
Yep.
Just find a center back and put him in. Just get a 17-year-old tall kid and put him in. This experiment needs to end for Toronto. They are in dire straits right now.
I don't know when the window opens up, but this is as sad as this sounds. USL is full of former Toronto FC defenders. I'm sure there's somebody that you've worked with before that's out there.
But and see, honestly, that's not even a bad point. Is go to USL, find the best center back, pay him what the 50 grand it'll cost you, and put him in. If you're that desperate. And I know Toronto's had their injury issues, but, you know, the fact that they, you know, okay, they've got a couple of games in hand. They have 11 points, just as a reminder, mm-hmm. out of 12 games. So, like, if we're comparing things to last season, I mean, 0.92 points per game is... Minnesota United is doing better than that, as some perspective.
I think that what's hard, everybody talked when Toronto won MLS Cup about it being sort of the final wonder for a team that had spent so many years in the wilderness. But I think that there is a certain amount, and if not unearned concern, that, you know, once you have a cold start to the season, sometimes you wonder if is it really all that different than the way things were. And now you have this, there was this discussion, and I can't find which blog, but it was one of the, it wasn't the 24th minute, but it was one of the 24th minute affiliated blogs that, 2 or 3 years ago had, Tobias. Had where they conceded 9 times in the last 5 minutes, and they lost points 9 times in one season, and they kept running the same posts that was like a parable about wanting to run out and ditch your chores to play with your friend Tobias, and so I saw, this is how I know how many times it's been, because somebody on Twitter posted an analysis of Tobias time. They called it. They were in the same blog post for so many times. In any case, what I'm trying to make is, yeah. That it can kind of come back to you a little bit once you're afraid of falling into that same habit of maybe you're not the dominant team anymore. All of a sudden, that could catch up to you real quick.
Mm-hmm. And we did talk about this last year, and when we sort of first started the podcast, I mean, we came in sort of the final third of the season, but Toronto did have quite a bit of luck last season. And also intimidated opponents. People were so afraid of that Giovinco-Altidore connection that I think a lot of teams showed them a lot more respect than they deserved at times, and that helped them roll over teams. And that served them very well, and I think a team that's hot has to capitalize on that. We've seen Atlanta United do the same thing, where teams are just so unsure of how to even begin to approach them that they can just run over them in the first 20 or 30 minutes. However, this is not what happened. Toronto came in, gets the three goals, and looks good.
They were great goals, too.
They were great goals. And I in watching them, I'm going, this feels like I'm watching Toronto. And everything is being strung together properly. And then it just all falls apart. And of course, it's not squarely on Bradley, but they really, really have to do something. And I'm seriously beginning to wonder, how long does Greg Vanney keep his job? And does Toronto ownership go, do you hang on to him for the whole summer? And, you know, at this point, it's clear they're not going to make the playoffs. But what do you do? Is it all on the players? Because Greg Vanney gambled big. We talked about that. He gambled big in CONCACAF. But he really seemed to have no game plan for coming up into the league, or to think that you're going to lose players because of all that early action you gave them in CONCACAF, that they're not going to be fit to play in the league. And this is not just like, oh, they've lost some points anymore. This is bad. It's real, real bad. The upside here, I guess, is that they scored three goals. And also, let's not take anything away from Columbus, is that was a hell of a comeback, and something that was also purely of their making, that Toronto crumbled underneath that pressure.
Mm-hmm. I think that to put it out there, it's Daniel Squizzato that had the Tobias story, if I recall. The thing that you mentioned about Vanney, I think that this is a longer con than this.
Yeah.
As much as people could be like, oh, well, they get fired. Well, you're in it now, right? Like, this is the issue, is that the bet is that you could take this sort of focus off at the beginning of the season and then make it into the playoffs and it'll be fine. I think that's mm-hmm. the big picture you have to look at. It's true. They're in a bad position right now in the table, and they are not putting together momentum. However, the bet is you get into the playoffs, and it doesn't matter where you get into the playoffs, as long as you are at your peak performance once you reach them. So I don't think that you usher somebody out before then, unless you think you're not going to qualify and there's a chance of...
But sitting with 11 points, with 12 games gone, okay, I guess you could say Toronto's got a couple of games in hand on teams that are just slightly above them. But, you know, Chicago Fire has had a rocky start to the season. They had some positive results this week, but they're still 6 points clear. You know, I don't see it happening, to be honest. I don't know that Vanney being fired is going to happen or even should happen, but I really, as much as Toronto achieved last season, I actually don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I believe every team above them is stronger, and although some have struggled, I just don't see Toronto at this point going on a four-game tear and picking up 12 points to all of a sudden make up the ground. And when you look at the teams above them, they're also far more defensively sound, with perhaps Orlando as the outlier there. I kind of want to go over, I'm just going to, if we can, quickly talk about the four Wednesday games, but yes, just really just say the results and then move on to the Friday games to kind of frame those results rather than talk about each of those games.
I do have notes for three of them, so I'll let you know if I have anything key to say about them.
Awesome. So first one up, the first game of the week was on Wednesday against New England and Atlanta, and I'm sure this is one that people just thought Atlanta can put away, but our dear beloved, or newly beloved, New England Revolution hang on and actually get a point out of this one. I thought this was another really, really strong performance from New England. Is a point just okay, or is a point fantastic in this situation?
For New England, yes. For Atlanta, they had so many chances to put the game away and were not able to find it. That first goal they had, Nagby's goal, I have in my notes, Nagby's goal rolls for 3 years in the box before Martinez finds it.
Yes.
It took a while. We had our first game of the week, we had our first save bouncing off the crossbar for our goalpost player of the week, who's my player of the week. Spoiler alert. That's what I had to say about that.
Yeah. I think New England got a little lucky here, but credit to them for hanging on. And when we come back to New England, we'll talk about why this result was so important. Kind of bizarre result. Philadelphia continues to do things, sort of, and beat Chicago 3-1?
Okay, I didn't see this, but I think that, yeah, they had a completely different result, but on the weekend, but that is very impressive, especially, I guess what you're starting to see maybe is Philadelphia beginning to pick it up at home.
Yeah. Which is where I think historically they've done very well and always been somewhat in the mix. But considering how much flack they got for the early season, you know, Ilsinho got a lovely goal. Corey Burke got his second. Alan Gordon scored the lone goal for Chicago.
Alan Gordon, and, fuck yeah.
And I can't even wait to say it, and so I'm just going to say it now. And then he also scored in Chicago's game on Saturday. So fuck all y'all that were saying that, you know, Alan Gordon hasn't done shit for so long. Now he scored 3 goals in 3 games, so suck it.
Alan Gordon is back in a big way.
He's 104, but he can put in those goals.
We next had Real Salt Lake 2, Houston 1.
Yeah. And so now I'm changing my mind. Can we talk about LA Dallas game so we can go back to RSL in a minute?
Yes.
Because I have feelings and thoughts.
A lot of things happened there.
A ton of things happened. So LA Galaxy, FC Dallas beats them 3-2. I believe this is the one, a brace from Ibrahimovic. That's correct, yes.
Yes,
a brace
from Ibrahimovic. Doing his best to get the team, pretty much one of the first times that I've, except for maybe his first game, that I've really seen him try actually put the team on his back.
I agree, and I think that's notable because I think he's kind of woken up and realized he's going to have to do that for much of this season unless they can bring in some support. Mm-hmm. You know, I still truly feel that so many of LA's star players have been largely absent, and you know, they've just relied so much on a certain type of player and a player that's been there for so long. You've got to begin to start questioning it, but Dallas is just quietly putting together an incredible season.
Yeah.
And is looking the team to beat. They had another positive result on Saturday, which we'll get to, but despite the late goals from Zlatan doing his best to, as you said, carry his team, the thing about Dallas is that, you know, when I don't know if this is a good way to look at it, but like if you're looking at picking up fantasy players, none of the top strikers are from Dallas. And yet they consistently are just knocking in goals. So they're very strong defensively, but they've also been great at banging in goals. But, you know, Ryan Hollingshead, Christian Coleman, Carlos Grezo, they're all names that we've heard score before. But Hollingshead, I think, is maybe a striker. Like, they're scoring goals by committee is what I'm trying to say.
I think
Dallas has 7 or 8 players on their team that's consistently banging in goals, and they've got a great defensive backline and a great goalkeeper, and I feel like this is a team that's going to do very, very well. I'm sure we'll be in the playoffs, but I think can actually go quite far as they just stifle teams.
This is actually, as surprising as it sounds, it's the first, it is the first regular season goal for Grezo, first for FC Dallas. So you did see a little bit of a debut, and you saw like players be able to succeed that are not their stars, and that is that's a really good thing. Unfortunately, a bad thing is that we had another instance of somebody getting sent off for face touching Christian Coleman.
Yeah. Don't, no, it's true. Right? And it was not long after he scored the goal too.
Yes. You had Coleman, I think it was like there was sort of some general handbags in just in the middle of his just in the middle of sort of the pushing, he just gets his hand up and it's not even really a full slap, but like I said, I feel like if it's not the league that's paying attention to this sort of stuff, you just don't touch opponents in the face. Don't do it.
Yeah, and the worst part is very few of these have been incidental or, like, you know, either a friendly slap or, you know, a very slight incidental, accidental nudge. These have all been very intentional hands or punches to the face, and it's just like, I don't know what to do at that point. I mean, we can't just say the referees are idiots. Like, it's a rule. There's a precedent. Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
So the one thing also I wanted to say, also I think that one thing that's crazy to think about is that Maxi Arruti did not feature in this game. He was on the bench. They rested him in a game that they won 3-2 over LA. So that was impressive.
And they've done very well managing their players as well. I think Dallas has done a great job of that because they had a very tough job because they had to play the other LA not 3 days later.
Yeah.
And high-flying LAFC, I think that was the right decision. And I think it was definitely a gamble for Dallas. But that is, to me, all the more reason why it's such a positive result for them is that then they go and win against the other LA. They won that game. Yes, they did.
Yeah, they went.
It's been so many ties lately. They win that one 2-1, and they are able to feature Arruti's in that. So I just think they're at Dallas right now is doing everything right. They're still giving up goals here and there. If they can tighten that up, I'm beginning to see Dallas. If they can keep this up, to me, they're my favorite to win this season.
They're certainly on a great run of form at the moment. I would say my parting notes for the Wednesday game for LA is that as good as Ibra was, they did not take enough advantage of being in a red card scenario.
I agree. And LA Galaxy hasn't taken advantage of almost anything this season, so not particularly surprising. Another kind of interesting result, and the reason why I wanted to hold off on this one is to maybe we can then use this to leapfrog into the Saturday games.
Yes.
Is Real Salt Lake has finally started to show some signs of life. And although Houston has been shaky at points, come in and get a, for me at least, a big, big win against Houston 2-1.
Yep.
And then go on to take out Seattle, who obviously struggled, but they neatly win that game 2-0. So an RSL team that we talked about a few weeks ago is looking to be this wounded animal slowly dragging itself across the pitch for teams to do what they want with, has all of a sudden turned into a team that's just racked up 6 points in a week.
Well, I think it was, I definitely am willing to wear it that I think not a week ago or 2 weeks ago was willing to ask is Raimondo past it and he's gone and have two or three great games.
I think we both did. I think he might have been listening and he's like, all right, assholes.
I take it back.
Some saves.
I haven't written
he
down.
He stood on his head in that second game. Yeah.
He did great. Do you have the Luis Silva goal? Was great, and it came off of I'm getting used to in the highlights they always refer to RSL Saucedo as Bofo, and I have no idea why that is the case.
I don't know either. I think for most of this season and last I thought they were two different players.
Well, I'll look it up and I'll try to tell us. That'll be my homework, is to find out why he's called Bofo. But he had a great ball in on that. His pass in was great, so he was very good at setting that up. Also, as we've been grousing about the dreadlocks of Breck Shea of the Vancouver Whitecaps, I wanted to shout out Kyle Beckerman, who cut his dreads and scored in this game with his short hair, so maybe that helped.
and comes in as the super sub on this one, not a position he's particularly familiar with. And I got to say, I've loved to hate Kyle Beckerman, and perhaps it was just the hair, but this is one where I go, you know, we talk a lot about Mike Petke as just a great personality in MLS, but there's no denying, in even his short time with the team, he's a fantastic coach, and he knows how to get good things out of good players. And he's set the team up, you know, they're getting people back from injury a little bit, but he's just set them up really well. And they had a really stumbling start to the season, but okay. Now maybe they're not my team of the week, but I feel like they should be.
They've been doing good.
RSL. They're slowly doing it.
For the RSL Seattle game, I had written in my notes floating shots only, because you had these the first goal came off of a shot that was parried and it hit. Baird got a header off of it and sort of arced gracefully through the air while everybody watched. You also had a very classic hockey move where Seattle's goalkeeper is up trying to contest a corner and the ball busts out way soon before he's able to start sprinting. And RSL are trying to contend with Seattle's defense with no goalkeeper in the net, but are eventually able to get another big floating shot into the goal for the 2-0. You don't see that too often. For the amount of times that the goalkeepers get sent up, you rarely see the direct counterattack.
It's true, yeah, and especially in MLS, you see very few teams that are actually able to capitalize on that. I've decided RSL is not my team of the week. However, I'm going to say that Luis Silva is my player of the week.
Nice.
A guy that's all of a sudden come to life again and has been doing a ton for the club. And again, a big 1 week, 6 points on the board, and all of a sudden they're flying up the table. That puts them in for third. And they've got a game in hand against Dallas. So, I mean, they're 4 points behind, but for a team that had such a miserable start to the season, all of a sudden is third in the West and looking pretty good. And this is a great time of year to be finding form as well, right before the World Cup break.
Doing some harm as well to Seattle, who, like Toronto, is feeling that hangover after 2 years of being the dominant team. And I don't have a lot to say about them. I don't have a lot from them in my notes.
So. I don't either. I was just going to ask you, do we have anything to add to Seattle and how bad they are right now?
No, I think that they're a team that is going to roll into the World Cup break and perhaps into the second window ready for a break.
They've got some serious soul searching and questions to ask, and I don't even know where to start with that team anymore.
Fellow Cascadian team Portland drew 1-1 with LA Galaxy. I felt that compared to the other game, you had much the other Galaxy game. This was a real showcase for David Bingham, the goalkeeper. I thought he had an amazing game here.
I thought so too. Yes, let's give some shout outs to some goalkeepers finally.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, I honestly, to be honest, I watched this game thinking, and it ended up being a draw, but I watched this game being like, every time I see in the highlights a goalkeeper do well in the first half, they have some big fucking disaster in the second half. Or like, I'm like, this goalkeeper is quite good, and then they ship three goals. But Bingham was able to hold it in, and I think that Portland had a lot of pressure. It would have been a lot worse if it was not for his sterling performance.
I completely agree. I think Portland has been doing a lot of things better and right recently. Mm-hmm. I actually think this is one they should have stuck away and won. And we saw a few of the flaws that Portland's had recently sort of rear their ugly heads. But I also thought LA came in here into a hostile environment. I believe it was in Portland, was it not?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. So to get a point after a very disappointing Wednesday game, rather, is something for them against a as good of a side as Portland. But just, again, the simple errors add up for them, and Portland's able to put it away. But full credit to Bingham to keep it at a tie.
Yeah, it's like the only thing you could do in that game to get it past him was to call a penalty, which is what ended up happening.
Yeah.
What else do we have? We had we were talking about Alan Gordon and his many successes. He scored a third time. Was in the right place at the right time to head it down for the first in a 2-1 win for Chicago over San Jose.
Yep. San Jose's problems continue to rear their ugly head. And as usual, the only two players that seem to give a shit show up and connect towards the end. Wondolowski sends in a beautiful, beautiful ball. And Danny Hosen just somehow, I don't know what part of his foot or knee it came off of, but just gets into space and knocks it in. But a really positive result for Chicago to take another goal, or to take another 3 points, rather. I said goal because I was just opening up to confirm that, of course, Alan Gordon makes the difference again. Gets them on the board.
Had one off the post, too.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Nikolic has not scored in the last three matches, but Alan Gordon has.
Yeah. So, I haven't seen much from him. Katai, I've been very impressed with, as I've mentioned before, but he had a great shot through a contested area that caught that second goal that ended up being the important one.
He did, yeah. Katai has been really good. Eriksson, though, is a player that's been frustrating for me to watch. He came in early on for San Jose, I mean, in this season, as something that might have been a bright spot for them. But he had a couple of chances where he just lashes at it. And I don't know if it's just frustration or what, but, you know, for such a big signing, he really seems to not be able to find his form. And San Jose just right now is not looking like a team that's able to beat many teams. And not because they're terrible. You'd think with the likes of Vaco and Hosen and Wando that there'd be a few more goals and a little bit more out of them. But as we saw last season, it kind of took a really long time for that to really light up. And even then, we were just going like, hey, they drew a game. Good for them. So disappointing for San Jose fans, I imagine.
Especially because that goal from Hosen didn't really come on the running play. It was kind of more that Wondolowski saw him kind of running in and got the, like, got, it was more of a one-time opportunity than sort of a systems victory, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I definitely also thought, I think that as we talk about Dallas, Chicago could be in the position where Dallas is, but it has not yet been able to get those sort of big ticket fixtures against big teams in the same conference. Mm-hmm. They could fire up, in other words.
I agree. A team that had a terrible week was Houston, a team that we've talked about is, I think a couple of times we've picked it as our team of the week, just could not put much together this week.
Bad time.
Outside of Albert Elis getting a goal, as he usually does. However, you would not exactly expect that a game that Montreal would finally win would be against Houston. But lo and behold, Montreal finally picks up 3 points against none other and a really important home win.
This is so weird to me because the big thing that I had written down is that Montreal still made a lot of mistakes in this game. Like
thank you.
You had Piotti going off the bar, which is not his fault. You had this you had Lovitz going down in a play. I had it written down that it goes to the ground and almost costs the impact. Like he's trying to block a shot or something, or he's trying to poke check, and he just ends up on the ground and watches the rest of the play from the ground. And I'm thinking, oh my God, he could have just got lit up. And Yuka Ratala almost scored an own goal that was saved by the goalkeeper.
Yeah. And I was having this thing where I was going like, okay, wow, what's Montreal's goalkeeper's name?
Bush, Evan Bush.
Evan Bush. God, thank you. I was like, Bush has, I think, right now the most saves in MLS. And I was wondering,
oh, wow.
Like, how does that happen? Uh-oh. And I was going, actually, uh-oh. That's kind of maybe a false statistic because it shows you how shitty your backline is that you have to make that many saves and you still have given up so many goals. Mm-hmm. I agree. There was just so much of Montreal ball watching again. This seemed kind of lucky.
Yeah.
Vargas's goal, for me, I think that could possibly be my goal of the week.
He looks great. Jason Vargas was great for the impact.
Yeah. Nice little turn. Just bombs it in. Doesn't even think about it. Beautiful, beautiful goal. Part of this game also, hey, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Montreal at this point because, boy, they just deserve something. However, it's important to note that I think Houston kind of gambled a bit in this game and thought, you know, it's a Montreal, it's an away game, let's, you know, we're going to rest Kyoto, Manotas, Martinez were all starting off and came on late. I still think Montreal got a little lucky with this one, and Houston was trying to shake off the bruises from Wednesday. Houston needs to be a lot more consistent for me, so I still think it's a very positive move for Montreal, but I don't know. Where do you place this? Do you think it's just sort of luck, or is this Montreal's fortunes beginning to change?
Any team, even a bad team, gets a win or two on the standing sheet by the end of the season. Not saying that there's no hope for Montreal, but I think that this is one of the ones where you find a team that's snake bit and a team that is usually snake bit but can overcome it a little bit. And this is great for morale, and hopefully they can turn it around. But it does not represent new success. It doesn't mean, like, they didn't change anything. Nothing changed. They just.
That's a really good point.
Their many mistakes didn't hurt them, and yes. Usually they hurt them. So, you can't say they screwed up less, and you can't say that they had a better like attack because they still only scored one goal. It's great for them, and it shows the benefit of the young players, especially Vargas. But they have work to do.
Agreed. And it sucks too. Like I'd love to say something more positive about any of the Canadian teams, which it just has not come to fruition so far.
Even though we got a win and two draws.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I guess maybe we're just asking too much at this point.
Do we want to talk about the week's craziest 17-minute game?
The Atlanta Philadelphia game?
Yeah, I have that one.
Let's go there. Let's go there.
Let's do that.
I'm sure you have notes. So Atlanta comes off of the Wednesday game, a point against New England. New England sort of brings the game to them, gets a little lucky, admittedly. And at the beginning of this, you think, hey, maybe this could be an okay match. Philadelphia's had some results. And it'd be great to see a not so highly rated Eastern team go against the most highly rated Eastern team, arguably. What happens?
Some wild shit happens on the 17th minute. That's what I can tell you happens. Austin,
hot take.
Austin Trusty, in some people argue, and I feel like the camera angles make it hard to tell whether or not he's got contact, but what appears to happen is that Trusty reaches behind, I think, Martinez. He's coming up behind Martinez, and he pokes the ball out front of him. In doing so, he makes contact with the back of the Atlanta scorer's legs, bringing them down, which would be a foul, except I do feel like he got the ball. Now, if there's a camera angle that tells me that I'm wrong, who knows? But I see what the argument is for Trusty didn't commit a penalty. And the Union were definitely willing to make that argument. In fact, so strongly that they sent off, that the referee sent off two players in quick succession with what I believe were four yellow cards. So it was kind of, we are kind of told, no, okay, Bedoya already had a yellow. So we're kind of told that we know that the descent foul is yellow, but it seemed like there was a point where the referee said, I'm not willing to be talked to anymore, and if you speak to me, maybe there was a slur being used, maybe there was some unrealistic language, who knows, but it seemed just from watching that Soren Stojka said, just like, if you talk to me anymore, I'm going to show you a yellow card, and he dealt three yellow cards in 10 seconds. It sent off two players.
Including a second yellow that resulted in Philadelphia playing with nine men. This one is tough. I guess since you are already sort of started, I'll go first, although I really don't want to.
Yeah.
In terms of, is he justified in this? I think that the red and the double yellow is possibly justified. The question, of course, is that was the first yellow on that player justified? It's hard to say. I think as a referee, you have to keep your head as well.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that, as you said, we have no idea what's being said on the pitch. Many have argued that it doesn't matter. You can say whatever you want to a referee as a player. I disagree. But I think Philadelphia has every right to be riled up about it. But this is kind of one where I go, as somebody that's done a very little bit of coaching, you also want your players to perform to the best of their abilities and keep their heads on the pitch. And even if there's a terrible call, it's still mass confrontation. And I think that's the thing that perhaps we're missing from this equation if we're evaluating it, is that you've got players that start swarming in around the referee. It is a mass confrontation, and the referee happens to be in the middle of it, which doesn't always often happen. And so I think that's why there's so many yellow cards, is that mass confrontation usually happens between players away from the referee, and so they just watch and see what happens. But when it's all aimed at the referee and happening right under his nose, you're trying to get control of a game. That being said, as you said, it's a 17-minute game, because to send two players off, you know, in the 22nd minute by the time it's all said and done, means you effectively don't have a game anymore. The best analysis I heard about this game is that this is a great result for Philadelphia to only go down 3-1 with nine men, because Atlanta has beaten opponents into submission when they've gone down even one player.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you agree with that assessment? Does the referee just need to take control and do something?
I think, as much as it's tough, because I also do believe that you can't surround the official, and they definitely did that. So,
yeah.
But I just feel like as a referee, is as much as I do feel like the referee was not in control, and I feel like to do something that affects the outcome of the game so clearly is unconscionable in that situation. Like that's the long and short of it, is that if we're going to say that if you if we're going to say, why not just call off the game at that point? Why doesn't the referee just walk off the pitch and say, all right, it's over. Right.
Okay. Like, unpopular take, but devil's advocate point here. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, and I, on the surface of that, I agree with that argument. But then does it also make sense the player's disproportionate response that early into the game to get so riled up and have a mass confrontation around the referee in the 17th minute to maybe not keep their heads and have the captain come out and talk to the referee and ask for an explanation? But it, rather than that, what ends up happening is they end up playing with nine men. Like, to me, there's maybe equal parts in this.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I still definitely agree. A referee has to have other tools in their back pocket that's not just a red card or four yellows. Like, they need to have other options available to them. And I've seen other referees handle situations like these where, you know, they just simply walk away and they put a hand up, or, you know, they're able to talk to a player calmly. And to me, this is just a referee who's already lost their head and has decided that if anybody else, like you said, comes and talks to them, they're done. And if that's the precedent we're going to set, I think that's where that continues to be the frustration for people, is what precedent does this set? If you can't talk to a referee, if you can't get riled up and show emotion. However, I feel like the way that this played out, you know, perhaps at least one of those reds is fair, and probably both.
I think that it really comes down to me, and I don't know that this is the best way to look at it, but it's I think it's true, is do you think that the referee is right? Not in terms of do you show the yellows or not, but I mean, like, do you think that the like how much should you, if a player has such a well-executed tackle, how much should you not talk about it?
Right.
And I think that there's kind of there was VAR, so I guess VAR decided that it wasn't. Or maybe there wasn't.
I don't think there was.
And then, also, why not? And why not on that case too?
Yeah. Also, Philadelphia Union has officially appealed the Bedoya red card as well.
Sensible.
And their claim, apparently, also Madunian, the charge was that he spit at the referee.
Okay, that can't be done. That's fair.
However, I think they're also disputing that, is he's yelling and he happens to spit on the referee. However, it's still like, if you're that close and you're spitting on the referee, whether it's intentional or not, and you've got mass confrontation. The other part of this too that I'll give some credit to,
that's a bit like dangerous play, isn't it? Like, it doesn't matter what your intention was. If you spit on the referee, you spit on the referee.
I'll say this as well, and perhaps this is maybe a more in, I don't know. It's whether it's a talking point or not. To his credit, Lorentowicz gets in the mix to try to calm down the players.
Yes.
From Philadelphia. And so this is where I feel like perhaps it's a little bit fair, is the mass confrontation is largely happening from Philadelphia players, and Lorentowicz, chief among them, is trying to calm them down and trying to get them out of the referee's face. So I don't think Atlanta can be blamed for this one. Certainly, I think there's good criticism to be leveled at the referee, but this is not a dirty, dirty play from Atlanta or them trying to do anything. Lorentowicz is very calm, very professional, and is actually trying to prevent players getting sent off from the opposing team. So that's where I feel that Philadelphia carries some of the blame here, is that when you've got an opponent taking you by the shoulders and pushing you back and trying to calm you down, and you're not taking that and you get sent off, you do have yourself to blame in that situation to some degree.
That makes a lot of sense. There needed to be more control. You're absolutely right. And also, another point to make in favor of Soren Stoica is that the second penalty that he calls to make it 3-1, I thought was also a legitimate handball.
Yeah, agreed. What are we missing? I've lost track of the games here. NYCFC just routed Orlando, who had a shaky start to the season, found their legs, had a great stretch of games, and now has just decided to stop playing football. As a Vancouver Whitecaps fan that's finally about to be able to see a home game again and see this team, I'm sort of excited by this. And also going a little bit like, and also they've been missing Dyer, Dwyer. What's going on here? I mean, if we had this result last year, I feel like we would have just gone, yeah, okay, fair result, let's move on. This year, I feel like it's a little bit more surprising.
I think that we've still, and we were talking about, I was talking about the dominance we could see about from New York City last week when they did not have as much success. But they will destroy anybody who foolishly wanders into their den without a great game plan. I think that the key to this game was the missed penalty from Sasha Kljestan that went off the goalpost.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find what minute that was in specifically, but I think at that point they were only down 1-0. I thought it was a doable prospect for them to perhaps go on to win the game.
I feel like it was fairly early on. I think it was in the first 20 or so minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, they might. Okay, they may not even scored. I'm just looking back in the timeline to figure when that happened. But I think
I'd like to easily pull up the highlights and run through it, but I have to watch this fucking commercial first.
I feel like that was. It's tough. It's tough when you're watching the highlights.
And while we're pulling that up, let's also talk about Tajiri Shradi, who is when you see a 3-0 win against Orlando and from NYCFC, you wouldn't necessarily think, oh, you know, it's probably going to be some of the other players we haven't heard. Of course, Maxi Morales is, we know what he can do. Morales. But Tajiri Shradi has just had a fantastic season. And I know that it's not his first season with them, but God, he had a hell of a game. And not really a star of MLS, but he certainly looked like one in this game.
So the Tajiri has that first great goal I have here that he burned number 25, who is Orlando number 25, Toya. He burns Toya so bad, fuck.
Yeah.
He just goes one way and leaves him in the dust.
And Morales does that as well, too. And that's where NYCFC continues to do so well, is just burning players in that transition. A little bit of extra quality on the wings is really what helps them out.
So Tajiri scores in the first half. They go in to halftime up 1-0. Kleshchen wins, Orlando wins the free kick, and Kleshchen can convert on the 48th minute.
It did happen a little later, right?
So it was just at the beginning of that second half, and I think that puts them on the wrong foot because they were putting together a little bit more before that, and I think that I didn't see as much for them afterwards.
The unfortunate part, too, is, you know, it happens to the best of them, and Kleshchen, we know, can take penalties, but he actually guesses the right way, you know, and 2 inches the other way, that's a solid goal, and you've got a good 1-1 game on your hands. But I agree, that just seems to take the wind out of their sails. I think the danger, to me, for Orlando right now has been that when their star players aren't performing, the whole team seems to kind of collapse. And we saw it a ton last season that they really seem to rely heavily just on the momentum of a couple of players. And Kleshchen's going to have his bad nights. He's the assist king. He's a great penalty taker. He's, I think, probably one of the smartest midfielders in MLS. He's going to miss a shot every now and then and miss a penalty. And he misses it, but he still guesses the right way. Like, he had the right idea. But your team has to rally around you and provide something. But it just seemed a little bit too far gone for everyone.
I honestly feel like Kleshchen is a great 1B player. And I think he was that in New York, where he still may be on some nights your best player. Sometimes he may be your second best player. It is occasionally a toss-up. I think that role to sit behind a more pronounced star and or maybe step up on some nights to be the key person fits him a little bit better than being the sole relied upon protagonist.
I agree. I'm just lining things up here, making sure I know what's going on.
Josue Coleman, okay, who also found the post, yet another post this week.
So many posts.
New York Red Bull. What were you going to discuss?
Red Bulls and New England.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to call it now. My team of the week, New England Revolution. They also just lost in the whatever is now the Lamar Hunt Open Cup against Louisville City. Congratulations, Louisville. But two games in 1 week. Big point against Atlanta, as we talked about. And New York Red Bulls, although they've had their troubles recently, this to me is why RSL doesn't get my team of the week. RSL had a big 6 points over 4 points from New England Revolution. However, New England had much tougher opponents. They're playing arguably, you know, two of the three best teams in the East.
Yep.
In Atlanta and New York Red Bulls, and storm in and get a crucial 3 points from New England. You know, Bradley Wright Phillips gets his goal early on, and then New England just battens down the hatches and makes it happen. And let's talk about Teal Bunbury.
He's on the far post. He got that second goal. Like you say, New York gets up first and holds that lead. Just before halftime, Fagundes makes it 1-1. I think that what happens there is you get New York loads up the right side too much, and then you have Fagundes out open and has a lot of space to put away his goal. But eventually, you're absolutely right. They battened up down the hatches. They were able to go into halftime on even terms, and Bunbury was able to cement a big, big week.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I brought up the top goal scorers in MLS to see where he sat. There's an awful lot of players sitting with five, but he's just, you know, he was a player that we talked about last season as sort of quietly doing the work that needed to be done, but not always doing it, or just not always having it come off for him. But God, he's had such a fantastic season or start to the season. Whether he's scoring goals or just creating problems, and gets the game winner here. And also credit to New England. Can you imagine a same situation where last year they go down a goal against any team and claw back to get a win, let alone the Red Bulls?
No. Wouldn't happen.
Exactly. Exactly. So this to me is why, yeah, New England is my team of the week. This two huge results. And the important thing about these results is I know it's a long way off, but when you start thinking about possible playoff contentions and playoff brackets, you go, okay, so let's picture an elimination round against New York Red Bulls. Mm-hmm. Well, they go down a goal early on from Bradley Wright Phillips. That could suck the wind out of almost any team. And yet they claw back and they get something out of it. Let's consider them going into a knockout stage against Atlanta, and it ties 1-1, and, you know, maybe some miscues from Atlanta, and they win on penalties. Like, it's feasible. I'm not saying it's necessarily likely, but it's a hell of a lot more likely than a lot of the other teams in the East right now, like Chicago, that you would think perhaps have a better chance at the playoff picture. New England, if they can continue to show the same amount of character, I think we'll make it to the playoffs and could have a real nice little run.
If you talk even about New England's last year, to think of where they are in the standings now, okay, they're fifth out of
six. It's unreal.
The six playoff places. But if you look at the teams that are above them, Atlanta, New York City, Columbus, New York Red Bulls, all four of those teams have been lights out. And to hang with them and to be on the same amount of points as New York is a major achievement from where they were last year. And you look at the teams that are below them, Orlando City, Philadelphia, and Chicago are the nearest. All of those teams still have big weaknesses or have not been able to fire on that same amount. So they are running with the big boys in the conference, and I would say they're a step ahead of their rivals underneath.
Yes, the rivals underneath are definitely a step ahead. The thing I'd like to see from New England is a little bit more of road form. They've only won one away, and that's the difference between them and the teams above them. And we can talk about the teams below them, but if they want to break through and sort of cement their place in it. They need to get a few more road wins. That being said, they've put together some ties, and they've been very strong at home. They have lost two home games. They've given up a number of goals, but again, this is a team that has fought back and scraped points out of games, not unlike Vancouver Whitecaps. And I actually think they're pretty comparable teams at this point, and maybe it makes that 3-3 draw all the more palatable.
Yes.
Is that, you know, New England has scored not a lot of goals, but pretty good. 24 is all right. It puts them, quick look here, fourth most in the Eastern League, mm-hmm. but 20 goals against. They need to tighten things up at the back. But that's a solvable thing, right?
Yes.
That's not needing to throw out the whole formula. They're scoring goals. Maybe they just need to look perhaps at a good defensive mid or a good center back to sign in the summer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we look at the Whitecaps, it's a little different because they've given up a massive 28 goals. Scored 21.
Ba-dum-tsh.
However, it is interesting that, you know, with a slightly better away form, they're still sitting a little lower. Yeah, okay, maybe they're more comparable to the Portland Timbers on second thoughts. But
stronger
point is stronger, here that New England had a real shit season last year. A real not good time.
Yes.
And the fact that they are where they are, without throwing out everything, with having so many of the same key players, getting rid of two of their star players, just goes to show what the right sort of team chemistry can do, and that money cannot buy sometimes.
Absolutely. I think that the West has also been a little bit tougher. If you want to rate points for points. You saw Dallas get its second win of the week over LAFC. I thought that was also a very impressive performance, and we've been talking about how good Dallas looks. So you kind of see that LAFC have the chance after Dallas locks down the first half. You see that they have the chance to sort of start maybe making a turnaround, and then Jordan Harvey gets sent off, unfortunately.
Jordan Harvey got sent off? How did I miss that?
He got sent off.
Jordan, what did you do?
It kind of cut off the momentum there. If I recall, it wasn't too harsh. It was just, I think it was just late. Yes. Yeah, it was late. Like, the ball had already kind of moved on, and he arced out the player's legs from underneath him.
Mm. Roland Lemah continues to just be on a run here as well, which has been super positive. Oh, it was on a second yellow for Harvey. That's why.
That makes sense.
I was like, I don't recall Harvey. Well, he might have gotten a straight red once in Vancouver, but not often. He's not a particularly dirty player if he can even catch up with the person he's trying to tackle. You know, LAFC is really missing Vela right now. And this is where you go, you see the value of a player like that, and you can see why they spent the kind of money they did. But as we both talked about early on in the season, despite LAFC's occasional routes of teams, very beatable.
Yeah.
And if one or two things go wrong, a team can beat them. And certainly a team like Dallas can find a way to beat them. So good for LAFC for getting the goal. I would not have wanted to play in this game.
Yeah.
It was a hot one down in Texas. But, you know, credit to Dallas. We saw the return of Lee Wynn, who made his first start for LAFC. Didn't do a hell of a lot. I don't think we can read too much into that at this point. I think Lee Wynn's just struggling to get minutes in the team, and could be a real positive for LAFC moving forward as we get to the second part of the season. And as players tire and there's injuries, Lee Wynn's coming in fresh because he has not played a lot.
I think the most I saw of him, I saw he was trying to defend back on a corner, and I saw his headband bopping up, popping up here and there.
Yeah. Okay. Last game. You fading on me here? I know it's late there. I'm sorry.
I didn't actually see the highlights for this one because it happened on Sunday. Oh. And it hadn't popped up in MLS's feed yet.
I just realized, too, I don't think we've ever actually talked about how we do this podcast. Have we?
Well, it's sort of
time. We've talked. I think it's come up in conversation that you're in New Brunswick and I'm in Vancouver. But
yes, I'm in St. John, New Brunswick. We talk on Skype.
You get the short end of the stick on this one.
That's fine. I live the time of day vicariously through you. That you can still be in a place where it's what, 8 o'clock? There's so much evening.
Yeah. Well, no, I just had a moment. I looked at them like, oh, 7:48 already. Oh, I'm hungry.
So sorry,
momentarily distracted.
So what happened in this game?
So I was actually really looking forward to this game. I came back from Toronto on Saturday night, so I was like, oh, I can finally settle and just watch a full game. And for whatever reason, DAZN did not have this game on, which sucked. So I had to find a crappy stream, which didn't really work. But I did my best to watch this one. And at this point, I'm just always cheering for Minnesota because I just want them to get some points. But I knew against Sporting KC it would be kind of a tough match. Mm-hmm. So Saloy gets a goal early on in the 9th minute, and I'm just like, okay, here we go. Another complete rout for SKC and another complete real bad rout against Minnesota. And then 2 minutes later, Tyrone Mears steps up, scores a fantastic goal, and I'm like, all right, we got a game on our hands. This could be a thing.
Uh-oh.
Like, maybe the team that brings SKC to their knees is Minnesota. Wouldn't that be a great storyline? But we were only at the 11th minute, unfortunately. And by the end of the first half, it was 3-1. Kamal gets a great goal. Lobato gets a great goal. And again, talking about teams that are scoring goals by committee, I'll make 2 points here and I'll try to actually summarize them. First of all, Sporting Kansas City has depth, and that is how they've continued to do so well. Like Dallas, like a couple of other teams in the league, Columbus, New England, they don't need star strikers because their whole team can score goals.
Yeah.
So 4 goals from 4 players, and how often has this happened this season with Sporting KC, where they're not relying on one player? And you know, at a moment I was like, who's Kamal? I think I know the name, but what does he do? I'm like, it's a great goal. Yeah. Christian Lobato, same thing. I was like, wait, who's Lobato? What? And then finishing off things, Diego Rubio, I know, and sort of puts the stamp on it. A pretty expected result, I would say, overall in this game. Mm-hmm. Perhaps surprising that Minnesota scored a goal at all.
Unfortunate for Maximiliano to be what appears to be substituted on in the first half and then gets sent off. Or no, he gets subbed on at halftime and then pretty much immediately takes a yellow card on 48 and then gets sent off at 63 when it's already 3-1.
Yeah. It's tough. However, I also say this, like, part of the strength of SKC is the depth. Johnny Russell was out on international duty. Kyrie Shelton was out with a slight injury, who's been great for them. So this just continues to show, like, as much as fans continue to talk about teams that aren't spending money and need to get star players, look at Seattle. Look at how much money they're spending on players. And they're at the bottom of the table. Look at Toronto right now. Look how much money they're spending on players. SKC, yeah, they got high salaries, but it's spread out a little bit more. And it means when players like Johnny Russell go away on international duty or there's knocks here and there, they've got players that can fill in. and they've just got such a good system going. If I had to call it today, I'd go an SKC Dallas final match would be a fun and exciting toe-to-toe, you know, good defensive strategies, but lots of bombing down the wings. Like, that could be a really exciting final.
In the West.
I'm not sure how that...
In the Western Conference.
I think it could be a final of two Western teams this season.
I don't think it happens like that. It would have to be the Western. It would have to be the Western Conference final.
Oh right. Oh,
because they're in the same. They're in the same.
Playoffs are stupid.
Playoffs? You kidding me? I think it's funny when you look at. It's kind of. Atlanta only finished fourth last year, but it's if you look at the Eastern standings compared to last year, it's kind of like if you just took Toronto out and let everybody else sift back up.
It's true. It's a good point.
It's not surprising. It's not surprising to me at all to see Atlanta and New York as the top two. But the Western Conference is really a big, a big dice shaker different than you saw last year.
Yeah, and I got to say that the top four teams, if you look at the top two from each conference right now, it could be a kind of tasty semi-conference, as you so politely reminded me. Let's say you had New York City FC against FC Dallas. That could be fun. Mm-hmm. SKC against Atlanta United. That could be fun. With any of those four, well, a combination of those four teams ending up in the final, that feels kind of likely at this point without a major shakeup to things. The teams that still seem in it, and this isn't just about table results, but in terms of grit and just how they've been performing, is New England, Columbus, RSL, and LAFC, possibly, maybe Portland. I agree. The West is still kind of open. The West remains the Wild West. If you look at the bottom four teams in the West, you can't imagine there's going to be a ton going on there without major improvements. Minnesota, San Jose, Seattle, and Colorado. You feel like they're battling for the bottom four. At the same time, Minnesota is still 7 points clear of San Jose, who's 10th, and Minnesota sitting at 9.
Which is in itself a great improvement for Minnesota.
I think it sounds so sad when you put that.
But hey, I mean, like, that's
it's true.
Like,
it's true.
If you look at how mired to the bottom they've been in the past, I think that the Whitecaps are in danger in sixth on 20 points unless they start winning, because both Houston and LA beneath them are teams that could fire up better than they have been doing so far.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the thing that's going to be
catchable.
Yeah. The thing that's going to be key for me about Vancouver Whitecaps is they have to start taking some points off of some big teams. And, you know, in the past, they seem to have done well against big teams and then lost really winnable games. And this season, it seems to just be they can tie really winnable teams and they lose horribly against the really good teams. To me right now, looking at the West, I go Sporting KC, Dallas, RSL, LAFC, Portland. I believe we have a game against each of those remaining.
Yeah.
Maybe not LAFC. We need to win at least two of those. Because we're talking about making the playoffs, but what's the fucking point of making the playoffs if you can't actually beat the team that you end up in the playoffs against?
I think momentum-wise, I'm nice to some teams that are lower in the standings than they could be, but the benefit, without trying to be too snooty about it, because of course the Whitecaps are not in that great of a position themselves, is that if you look at the next, they don't play another one of those big opponents again until August when they visit New York. They play one, two, three, four, five. Six games in the league, seven games in the league until then. And that's all Minnesota, Seattle, D.C., Chicago, Colorado, Philadelphia, Orlando.
To me, they need to win four of those.
Yeah.
With an emphasis, and they need to get Kamara in form. Yeah. If they can do that, then they could put themselves in a really good position. But right now, as it stands, you look at every team above them and you go, picture a playoff picture where they're beating SKC, Dallas, RSL, LAFC, or Portland Timbers. And I don't see it happening right now. So something's got to change.
What might change for DC in that time? I think it's our only big piece of news. You were saying that you have it on good words that Wayne Rooney to DC is now happening.
I believe so. I'm trying to check multiple sources to get a good sense of this, but we joked a while back about Wayne Rooney to DC, and you're like, yeah, it'd be a great idea, but is it actually going to happen? And then, of course, with the new stadium move, and obviously the ownership has a bit of money to throw around, perhaps it is. The last that I've heard, confirmed by multiple sources, is that Everton has given the go-ahead. Wayne Rooney has visited the club. He's passed the medical. Apparently, the last piece was him getting clearance from the club. And I believe this morning, Everton said, we want Wayne Rooney with our club long-term, but we give him permission to go. Mm. So there's, I think, Everton really sees a future for Rooney in coaching, but they have given royal assent for him to leave Goodison Park and go to DC United on a transfer for the next 1 or 2 years to retire.
So Rooney taking his last years in DC, or doing a DC swing and then going back to Everton to retire?
I believe it will be a Rooney doing his last years as a player in DC. So that is, I believe, from the coach. Yes, Marco Silva has said he wants to restore stability in Everton, and he's not going to stand in the way of Wayne Rooney's move. Mm-hmm. So that to me says we're kind of down to a facts and figures negotiation of what the bottom line will be. Rooney wants consistent playing minutes. I've hated Rooney the mm-hmm. whole time I've loved soccer. And what endears me to him immensely is that he's going to take a pay cut for this. Rooney wants to play soccer. And he could stay at Everton. He could shop himself around on maybe a loan deal to another club in England. He wants to play soccer and make an impact. That being said, I am so, so curious to see how well he fares in MLS, if he fares well at all. Mm-hmm. I still think he has something left to give. You know, he holds many records at Manchester United, and we can't forget that. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be quite the talisman that Ibrahimovic has been at points? Maybe not, but how much of a talisman has Ibrahimovic really been?
Well, I think the issue is...
And as we've seen, DC has put together some okay performances, and maybe it's just the confidence boost of having a player like Rooney at the front. It could be a big difference to them.
I feel the mathematic concern that I have is that Rooney's benefit is far more on attack. Then defense, he's not as good of an attacker as Ibrahimovic, and DC is a worse team in the other areas other than attack. So he's joining a team that's worse than the team that Ibrahimovic is joining, and he's worse than Ibrahimovic. So I don't know what sort of success you're going to get year one in terms of drawing people into that stadium. It's certainly not going to be on the level of an Atlanta at all.
No.
I don't think to draw that kind of energy in, and that's a little concerning.
And there was a story run this week about Wayne Rooney visiting DC United, and literally nobody knew who he was. Oops. Which, for Wayne Rooney, could actually be an attraction to the club. It was funny how the story was turned to be like, is this really a big deal? No one cares. Nobody knows who he is. And I'm like, Wayne Rooney's probably fine with that. He's not going to get called Shrek anywhere he goes. here's the thing, though, is that, and I know this because, again, I followed Rooney because I follow players I hate. He has tried to reinvent himself as a midfielder in the last few years. It didn't work at Man United, and it hasn't really panned out at Everton either. But what we've talked about in DC as being a fundamental problem that they have is they've actually been okay defensively. They haven't been one of the worst. They only have 9 points, and they're sitting dead last in the entire league. They are, I believe, I don't know, they're still better than Seattle and Colorado. Oh, Christ, it's real bad in the West. But they're dead last in the East. They've given up 18 goals, which is not great, but also Atlanta has given up 18 goals. Their trouble has been stringing things together to get the goals. They've had success up front with Maddox, Areola, a number of others. They need some connective tissue. Mm-hmm. Now, if they can get Wayne Rooney on an okay deal, Wayne Rooney's not going to be playing as a striker. That's my guess. He's going to be playing as a midfield, attacking midfield player. Mm.
Take some pressure
Whether
off.
Or not he's going to be able to compete against younger, faster players in MLS remains to be seen. If this was 2 years ago, I would go, Rooney could actually have a real good time with him. And Rooney is a very smart player, and he understands the game well. Of course he does. He's one of the greats. But I feel like it's a gamble for DC. This could either be the thing that they need or something that falls completely flat. Mm-hmm. I think it'll put some bums in seats. I think it will build the confidence of the players around them. And at first I went, well, it could be kind of crappy for players like Areola or Maddox, who have been doing quite well, to all of a sudden lose their spot to Rooney. And then I went, I don't think they will, though. I think you put all of those players on the pitch together and perhaps see what happens.
I think, yes. I think it's still, compared to other midseason joinings, or players that have joined midseason, and other teams that have moved into a team more midseason, it is much more throw it into the mixer than you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, let's just put these pieces together in hope something good happens. As opposed to something a little more calculated than that.
Yeah, I agree. It does seem a little bit like, okay, we'll just see what happens. I have one final little piece of news. Do we have time for that?
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
I was just going to say the Canadian Premier League announcement train rolls on. They announced today that Edmonton will be one of the cities, and there is an announcement on Friday. Whether or not, which seemed to leave it open, whether or not it was going to be FC Edmonton, whether or not it's going to be called FC Edmonton, or whether or not it will have the same visual identity. I still miss the same visual identity, but, you know, things change, I guess. And also, Winnipeg is having its announcement on Wednesday, as you may be hearing it soon. Mm-hmm.
It's exciting. I'm not as excited as I should be right now because I'm waiting for things to actually kind of kick off and happen there. But
looks like the BC team might be in Victoria, or at least on the island, and that'll be the only BC team for 2019.
No, not the hometown. Don't make me go to Victoria for more reasons. The last bit of news I have here is that there's been a bit of TAM fracas in MLS.
TAM!
And that, of course, we sometimes forget that MLS has the mighty power to step in because MLS owns all the contracts for all the players in the league. And apparently, there's a story now running in The Athletic, and it seems legit, is that MLS has now rejected contract extensions for players already in the league using TAM money, which means that Jovan Jones, Stephen Fry, Tim Parker, and one other player who's missing from this story, but I saw somewhere else, will not be allowed, that their teams will not be allowed to use TAM to buy down their contracts. Which I think effectively for New York Red Bulls means that Tim Parker now necessarily has to become a DP, or they're going to have to figure something out.
I
don't know how all that will shake out, but essentially, MLS has decided that TAM cannot be used for Tim Parker's contract in New York Red Bulls. And notably, Tim Parker asked for and is now receiving more money than the allowable maximum threshold by MLS for domestic players.
Which is kind of funny. Well, do we know the one thing? I was able to see the article, but I wonder whether or not. So do we know that it was New York that got turned down for the TAM and not Vancouver? First question. Second question, I guess it kind of makes his gambit a little rough, huh? You've all, the people who, you know, be careful what you ask for and be careful what you grant because you might get it. Perhaps New York only paid his money because they thought they could TAM it down.
From the two different stories that I've read, it will be New York on the hook for it.
I think that this is, like, when you talk about the players, especially Jovan Jones, who didn't he leave? Is this maybe why he left? Like you're literally chasing people out of the league, and the players that are named there, except for LAFC's fourth man, I can't remember the fourth man, the LAFC guy, I'm not as familiar with him, but all three of those are big players. And well, you know, Parker, you can debate, but they're players you want in the league, and they're players you want to continue in the league. And we've heard that David Osted was also maybe somebody who couldn't get tamped. I think that if you're going to have this mechanism, it can't be targeted allocation money if we feel like it. Like if you're going to trade players for it, and it essentially it's going to take the place of real actual money in your economic system, it's got to be usable however a club sees fit. You can't just have players. You can't have teams whizzing around TAM, and then when a club makes their plan, they send the player to get the TAM that they want, they identify the player that they want, they sign that player, they go to use the TAM that they acquired through an unrelated trade, and the league says, no. That ruins the whole system.
It does, and that to me is the really concerning point here, is that management and the whole front of house of these teams seems to not understand the rules. And how the fuck could they? It's hieroglyphics. Like, it's just so absurd and so complicated. Why is this vetting not done before these trades? If the league owns the contracts, how come the league isn't involved in the trades? I don't think that's necessarily efficient, but once it's a done deal, to then come back... Tim Parker's been playing for New York Red Bull since the beginning of the season. To now this far in say, oh, by the way, this isn't going to work and this contract counts as on the books or however it's figured out. You know, I think perhaps in the case of Stefan Fry, it kind of makes a little bit of sense in terms of, you know, he's unlikely to leave. He's a great player. And they wanted to give him a raise, so they did, and they were just looking for a way to sort of chop down the way in which they gave him a raise. But, you know, they're not going to all of a sudden ship Stefan Fry off. The other players, as you said, with Jovan Jones, he's gone.
You decided not to do it. It's silliness. And he left, right? Like, that's
yeah.
And the thing, the reason I need to see some transparency or the reasoning for why this didn't happen. But if we've known that rules in the league can be relaxed to have the right player in the right position where the league wants it to be. But at a certain point, when you're inviting enough people in, you have to trust clubs to want the player that they want.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's frustrating.
It really is frustrating, and I would just like to, as you said, it does come down to trust, and it would just be nice if the league could clarify these things for the clubs so that they could make decisions. However, they also need to adjust the rules to make sure that teams are able to do the right thing. I mean, for players like David Oestead to just get, essentially kind of locked out of certain contracts and certain potential offers based on arbitrary rules is totally absurd. We're supposed to be promoting soccer in North America. We're supposed to be promoting strength within the league. If we're going to make it so complicated that you need to have 9 lawyers on payroll to figure out whether or not you can sign a player, then it does ruin the whole thing. I am fundamentally behind, and I support the decision of MLS to try to find parity and try to make the league as equal as possible so that any team can win it. It's sometimes frustrating as a fan, but it's much more interesting for me right now to watch MLS than any other league. Because if you're watching La Liga, there's 3 teams that are playing for it, and really only 2.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the year, really only 1. That's if you're a Mallorca fan or Getafe fan, whatever. It's not fun.
Yeah.
There's no fucking point because at the end of the day, the top 3 teams are going to buy the top 2 players off of every team and form a super team and win everything. So I do agree that there needs to be some control in this league, but this to me has gone a little bit silly.
So next week will be our the last slate of games. This weekend will be the last slate, coming up will be the last slate of games before the 9-game World Cup break.
Uh-huh.
I assume we'll spend that time maybe talking a little bit about NWSL, CAMPL, USL, the various fun things that are happening. I was kind of joking that we should watch the FIFA movie that's on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
and do a little review. So if you've got, we've got 1 more week of games to talk about before we get there. But if you have whatever during the World Cup break, let us know what you want to hear about, and we'll try to come up with that kind of great MLS centric or FIFA centric content to a point.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter at @thatsomls, creating meaningless polls, sometimes meaningful, mostly meaningless.
They have meaning to me.
Thanks, buddy. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I even edit a Howler magazine, whatahowler.com. You can find this podcast at thatsomls.com. And That's MLS on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe.
Please do that.
Yes. And in the meantime, no matter how much you want to touch someone's face.
I just would like to have a new joke, but it's just always applicable.
Just keeps happening.
And often more than once in a week.
Don't get sent off.
Don't get sent off. Oh, dear.
Great. Great.